stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ira Melma. The battle for an IS-held city in Libya could be nearing an end. Forces aligned with Libya's unity government say they are close to taking control of the Islamic State-held port city of Sirte. The French news agency AFP reports heavy fighting was taking place near the Ouagadougou Conference Center that is being used as an IS command center. Warplanes also attacked IS-held positions. Fighters aligned with the government of National Accord began the battle for Sirte, the former Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi's hometown, in early May. Ahmed Hadia, a spokesman for the pro-government forces, told the Associated Press Friday the offensive is nearing its final stage. Militias from the western city of Misrata were able to reach the outskirts of Sirte earlier in the week, although they were slowed by mines and attacks by suicide bombers. Pro-government fighters are besieging the city from three directions: the west, the south, and the east. Two blasts at a Shiite shrine in a suburb of the Syrian capital have killed at least eight people and left many others wounded. Syrian state media say a suicide bomber struck at the entrance of the Sayyida Zainab shrine south of the center of Damascus. That blast was followed by a car bombing at the heavily guarded shrine important to Shiites throughout the world. The British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights reports a higher death toll than do Syrian authorities, saying at least 12 people were killed while dozens of others were wounded. There has been no immediate claim of responsibility for the attacks, which took place in an area where several other bombings have taken place in the past, often claimed by IS militants. This is VOA News. Afghan Taliban has condemned as futile new U.S. plans to increase airstrikes against the Islamist insurgency and to deploy American soldiers to the battlefield when necessary. U.S. President Barack Obama approved a wider role for the U.S. military after months of debate to help Afghan security forces combat the Taliban. A Taliban spokesman, Zabihullah Mujahid, said the moves will not deter it or cause it to step back and give up what he called the armed resistance. He said that would only lead to the waste of U.S. resources and more battlefield casualties. Most U.S. and NATO combat forces withdrew from Afghanistan in 2014, leaving behind about 13,000 troops under the so-called Resolute Support Mission to train, advise, and assist local forces. Former Republican U.S. presidential candidate Mitt Romney says he will not vote for this year's presumptive party nominee Donald Trump in November, citing the billionaire's racist and misogynistic remarks. The 2012 candidate, who lost to Democrat Barack Obama, Romney told the news network CNN that he will not vote for the Democratic candidate either, saying, "I just can't bring myself to vote for Hillary Clinton. I don't think that the policies that she promotes are right for the country," he said. Instead, Romney said he's considering voting for Libertarian candidate Gary Johnson, a remarkable admission for a Republican leader. The Republican Party is divided over the TV reality star candidate, who has questionable conservative credentials and no political experience. Trump emerged triumphant from a pack of more seasoned presidential hopefuls with his brash talk in an abrupt manner that alienated him from many Republican leaders. However, Republican voters chose him over them. A solar-powered airplane circled the Statue of Liberty before landing in New York City before dawn Saturday, part of a round-the-world flight that took the aircraft across the United States. The experimental Solar Impulse 2 aircraft landed in darkness at John F. Kennedy International Airport, concluding a five-hour flight from the city of Allentown, Pennsylvania. It is the latest leg of the electric plane's flight by Swiss pilots Bertrand Piccard and André Borsberg, who are sharing navigating duties. Organizers say the flight, which is using no fuel, shows the possibilities of clean energy technology. Their goal is to return to Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates, where the trip began in March of 2015. The plane has made stops in Oman, Myanmar, China, Japan, and Hawaii, as well as several cities in the continental United States. I'm Ira Melman in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
I would definitely say that the choice of Geoffrey Wariamwamba was a masterstroke on the side of Hakainde Hichilema.
Zambia's main opposition leader chooses a prominent former member of the ruling party as his running mate for the August 11 presidential poll.
The political class in Mozambique, thinking that they were going to get filthy rich really quickly and that the whole world was going to pump money into Mozambique, made the Renamo people feel even more marginalized and neglected.
Analysts fear Mozambique is heading towards a reprise of its bloody civil war after efforts to organize peace talks stall.
The promises we are hearing, and we do hear frequently from our leaders, and not seeing much change on the challenge of flooding in Accra.
And the Christian Council of Ghana calls on the authorities to resolve the perennial flooding in the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The leader of the Zambian main opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND, Hakainde Hichilema, has chosen former cabinet minister Geoffrey Mwamba as his running mate in the August 11 presidential election. Mr. Mwamba, until recently, was a prominent member of the ruling Patriotic Front Party. But members of the ruling party say Mwamba's defection is unlikely to hurt the chances of incumbent President Edgar Lungu from winning re-election. Aksan Sijani, the UPND director for elections, told me the opposition party is ready to form the next government following the group's surge in popularity ahead of the elections.
I would definitely say that the choice of Geoffrey Wariamwamba was a masterstroke on the side of Hakainde Hichilema. He is a very, very hardworking member of our party. He has demonstrated that beyond expectations since he joined this party some 2 years ago. So we are very happy ourselves as members of the UPND that Mr. Hakainde Hichilema settled for GBM, as he's popularly known. There's no doubt that he's going to enhance our electoral chances come 11th August this year.
Some members of the ruling Patriotic Front Party have accused GBM, Mr. Mwamba, of not having the qualification of the Standard 12 as demanded in the Constitution. And they said they will take him to court because he is not fit to be close to the center of power if the UPND wins election. What is your response to that questions about his qualification?
The Electoral Commission of Zambia has just approved the ticket. Hakainde Hichilema is the president, Geoffrey Wariamwamba as the vice president. We were just doing the nominations last week. So according to the chairman of the Electoral Commission of Zambia, Judge Isao Chulu, Mr. Mwamba has all the necessary credentials to run for the office that he has been nominated. So there's no issue here. The only issue which is there is that the ruling party is extremely unsettled by our appointment of GBM as running mate, because I think that he poses a real threat. He's a former member of the Patriotic Front, the ruling Patriotic Front. They know his capacity for work. They know what he can do. And it is from that angle that I think he is feared politically by the ruling party. There is no other issue about GBM other than that.
The Patriotic Front supporters have said that they have a broad national appeal and the UPND is only popular in very few places, and that the new constitutional demands of 50% plus one will not be met by the UPND because it doesn't have the broad national appeal.
The litmus test was the by-election, the presidential by-election which we had last year in January. In that election, we ran a very, very close race. In fact, If it were not for some underhand methods, we say in the UPND that we won that election. But if it were, Edgar Galungu of the Patriotic Front got 48%. Hakainde Hichilema of the UPND got 47%. Now, a party which is not popular, which does not have a popular appeal, cannot get that type of percentage. Now, I need to add that since last year, the popularity of UPND has been increasing by leaps and bounds, while the ruling Patriotic Front has been losing many members of its rank and file. We have gained a lot of support ourselves from senior members of the Patriotic Front and other members of the rank and file who have joined the UPND, meaning that from our 47%, which we got in last year, we are very confident that come August 11, we will beat the threshold of 50% plus one in the first round. We have grown as a party. We have a national appeal. You can go to every corner of this republic today. You will find UPND there. While the Patriotic Front is the one which has shrunk, there are many, many areas in this country where the PF is virtually non-existent.
The Patriotic Front is in talks with some so-called smaller parties to form an alliance in order for them to win, meeting the constitutional threshold of 50% plus one. Is there something like that in the UPND ahead of the August 11 general election?
The UPND is forming an alliance with the Zambian people. We are campaigning all over this republic now, and the people of Zambia are receiving our message. We are forming an alliance, a formidable alliance with the people of Zambia. That to us is the surest alliance that will give us what we need on 11th August. That being the case, however, we have won the support of a number of other people also who are supporting our candidature. For example, Mr. Miles Sampa and his United Democratic Front is part of the team that is campaigning with us to ensure that come 11th August, we have a new government.
Axen Sejani is Director for Elections of the Zambia Main Opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Zimbabwean police have arrested 15 young people who demonstrated against President Robert Mugabe. For VOA, Sebastian Nhofu reports from the courthouse in the capital, Harare, where five of the protesters were charged Friday.
The five young men arrested shortly after midnight Wednesday appeared before Harare Magistrate Court on charges of resisting arrest and robbing two people who had passed by Africa Union Square. Bail has been set at $1,000 each. Obey Shava from Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights is representing them. He says the charges are trumped up to intimidate the protesters.
I know that many of them are not even able to raise $50 as bail money. So effectively, they've been denied bail. The charges are very weak. These are manufactured allegations against my client. I'm sure you've heard I've raised complaints that there was an attempted abduction of my client by the law enforcement agents. It's not a surprise that they are now charged with robbery and theft. We are not surprised at all.
10 more activists at Africa Union Square were arrested Friday. Outside the court, other youths sang and vowed to continue demonstrating. They say they are fed up with President Robert Mugabe, who has ruled Zimbabwe since independence 36 years ago. They named their movement the, quote, 16 days occupation, unquote, as they planned to camp for 16 days and nights at the Africa Union Square, which overlooks Zimbabwe's parliament. The arrest began on day 9. In all, about 200 people have camped out in Africa Union Square. Most of them remain there Friday. The movement is just the latest sign of mounting opposition to the 92-year-old Mugabe. Earlier this week, a group of church leaders issued a statement saying the country needed transformation to get out of its long-running economic problems. One of those charged on Friday is the brother of Itai Dzamara, an anti-Mugabe activist who has not been seen since March last year. Rights groups say he was abducted by men believed to be state security agents. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Analysts fear Mozambique is headed for a reprise of its bloody civil war after efforts to organize peace talks appear to stall this week in the capital of Maputo. The former rebel party says its grievances about wanting more representation and a greater share of the nation's wealth have never really been addressed. Those issues appear to be driving new hostilities. VOA's Anita Powell has more from Johannesburg.
To understand what is happening in Mozambique right now, says analyst Alex Vines, you have to go back to 1992, the year that the Southern African nation emerged from a brutal 15-year civil war. Basically, he says, the victors, the ruling Frelimo party, did not want to compromise with the rebels-turned-opposition party, RENAMO.
The single biggest miscalculation was that Frelimo, under the second term of the former president, President Gabuza, embarked on a strategy of trying to get total Frelimo domination throughout the whole of Mozambique and isolated and marginalized the RENAMO leader. That in turn, with the discourse of gas and coal rents and the political class in Mozambique thinking that they were going to get filthy rich really quickly and that the whole world was going to pump money into Mozambique, made the RENAMO people feel even more marginalized and neglected.
The post-war years looked promising. Politically, at least, Frelimo made peace with RENAMO. The nation found massive natural gas deposits and held a series of relatively peaceful national elections, with Frelimo winning each one and with RENAMO crying foul every time. A new peace deal in 2014 put a temporary halt to RENAMO's threat of returning to war. Long-term RENAMO leader Afonso Jacama ran for president, but lost and insisted the poll was rigged. Since December of last year, skirmishes have escalated. Jacama claims he was targeted for assassination and that two of his officials were kidnapped and killed by government forces. Frelimo accused RENAMO fighters of killing locals and community leaders. Jacama has sent emissaries to the capital to try to arrange face-to-face talks between him and President Filipe Nyusi. Those talks have proceeded in fits and starts, with no visible result. The meetings were supposed to continue Monday, but did not. Jacama spoke to journalists in a rare phone press conference earlier this month. They say they want peace, and at the same time they attack me, he said. How can I give political directives to the groups that are negotiating and at the same time respond to Frelimo attacks? The government has denied that they are attacking RENAMO and accuses RENAMO of starting hostilities. Vine says the international community failed to support Mozambique after the civil war.
The international community believed Mozambique was a successful post-conflict country, and so they cut their support for disarmament and reintegration programs through Mozambican NGOs and others, including in central Mozambique. So some of the other methods of trying to offset some of that grievance, given what was going on, didn't occur, because it was regarded that Mozambique had been completed as a post-conflict success story, and there were other more demanding crises in the world for international support and partnership.
Mozambique is also in the throes of a severe debt crisis. Analysts say frustration with the ruling elite is growing well beyond RENAMO's strongholds, even, they worry, to the capital. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
This week, Italy's Coast Guard has rescued over 2,000 migrants in the Mediterranean. Italy's Coast Guard says they also recovered two bodies found in a boat. Of the more than 48,000 migrants traveling to Italy this year, one in 23 has died. For the latest on the plight of these African migrants, my colleague Douglas Impoga reached VOA reporter Antonella Sferreza in Palermo, the capital of Sicily.
this week about 2,500 migrants have been rescued in the Mediterranean Sea by the Italian Coast Guard, by the Frontex vessels and the NGO vessels. The majority of them have already disembarked in Sicily, where the reception centers are actually overcrowded. This latest migrant wave brings the number of total arrivals in Italy to 48,000 since the beginning of the year. The average is slightly above last year. As far as the nationality is concerned, the majority are from Eritrea, Nigeria, Gambia, Somalia, Ivory Coast, Sudan, Mali, and Senegal. And Libya is still the main departure point of the majority of migrants, but we are also seeing an increase of numbers of migrants sailing from Egypt.
Talking of reception centers where these migrants end up, do we know the conditions there? Do you have access? Do journalists have access to those centers?
No, actually, no. This is really a controversy in rising in these hours in Sicily, in a special way in Sicily, because the main hotspot, the main reception center in Italy, journalists are not allowed to enter the reception center. But yesterday, Richard Gere, the actor, the Hollywood actor, he went to Lampedusa and he spent hours inside the structure in Lampedusa together with the migrants spot. And the question is, how come that an actor received the permission while the reception center are off limits for journalists? I personally asked the permission as well on behalf of Voice of America, and the Minister of Interior spokeswoman told me that there are new strict directives which not allow the journalists in. So we are asking, the Sicilian journalists are asking, what's the problem? Why we cannot tell the people in what condition the migrants are hosted in the first reception centers?
The increased rescues and the deaths at sea don't seem to be having any effect on the determination of the migrants. They don't seem to be deterred by the risks.
The Mediterranean cross is confirmed the most dangerous trip for the migrant. And as usual, the exact death toll will never be known. Officials talk about at least 3,000 migrants drowned in the Mediterranean. But it's very difficult to know the truth, as with many body recovered, many deaths will never be officially confirmed.
Is it true, Antonella, that most migrants from Africa are primarily young men and do not include women and or children?
Many women, and actually, although the average of the arrivals in general is the same as last year, there is a significant increase in the numbers of minors arriving in Italy, and the majority of them are unaccompanied children. This year we have 7,500 minors, including 7,000 unaccompanied children. Nearly half of them come from Egypt, Gambia, Guinea, and Ivory Coast. The growing number of minors is actually surprising in a context that is roughly unchanged in terms of overall numbers of arrivals. And there is concern about their protection because obviously they are at high risk of risk of exploitation. This is a big problem, as last year, for example, 11,000 minors arrived in Italy, and more than 6,000 of them vanished. What happened to them? It's very difficult to say. According to Save the Children, many children escaped the reception center as they tried to reach their family in other European countries.
That was VOA reporter Antonella Sferreza. She spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Palermo, Sicily. The Christian Council of Ghana has called on the authorities to come up with immediate measures to resolve the perennial flood in the capital, Accra. This after parts of the city were flooded due to heavy rains. Residents in the flooded areas complained the Accra Metropolitan Authority has failed over the years to enforce building codes to ensure effective drainage system that could prevent the flood. Meanwhile, a section of the public have demanded the chief executive of the Accra Metropolitan Authority, Alfred Ni Okovandapoy, be fired. The General Secretary of the Christian Council, Reverend Kwabena Opunefrimpong, told me his group will continue to put pressure on the authorities to resolve the problems of the flooding in Accra.
The promises we are hearing, and we do hear frequently from our leaders, and not seeing much change on the challenge of flooding in Accra. What is the real issue? I know that there's an attitudinal side of it where some of our people are, you know, littering around, dumping rubbish here and there. But the problem is just bigger than accusing people that, oh, you drop rubbish here and there. It has something to do with the gutters. It has something to do with making sure that there's the space for water to run. And then just last week, we heard the mayor that, oh, what we witnessed last year will never reoccur. Then just within a week, it happened. So what do we do with such promises? And the statement was made in the presence of the president of our country, and it was done in church.
What is the Christian Council of Ghana saying about resolving this problem? Because people's life is at stake. Last year, so many people died as a result of this flood. And as you said, so many promises were made that were not necessarily kept. So as the biggest church group in the country, how are you putting pressure or in your own way meeting with these folks to help resolve this problem once and for all?
Leadership is supposed to solve problems. That's what leadership is all about. And so we expect our leaders to solve problems. However, if there are other problems that we don't know, again, we expect our leaders to tell us what the real problems are, what the consultants are saying, because people are being paid to do this job. So people are receiving taxpayers' money to do this work. What are they doing? What problem are they solving? And where have they reached? And therefore, if we are still having the problem, somebody must hold them responsible. So we as a church group, we are only reflecting the realities of the public, what we hear people saying. And we will want our leaders to know that even though you tell us you are doing this, it will never happen, we are getting promises. It seems it's becoming, your promises are becoming rhetoric. We want action. We are talking about people's life. We are talking about property. That while we are doing this with our leaders, we also have work to do. That the attitudinal side of the ordinary Ghanaian is also improved, where people don't litter where they are not supposed to litter. But we can't stop there. What government is supposed to do, our leaders must get them done. So we will continue our advocacy, our role, and we raise the issue as we see and hear ordinary Ghanaians expressing them.
Reverend Puni, concerns were recently raised about infrastructural development. There are buildings all over in Accra. However, the infrastructure to handle this kind of flooding seemed not to be there. Why hasn't there been any enforcement to ensure those codes are respected? And why is it that last year certain buildings were bulldozed, yet the problem still existed?
The issue we are considering that you told us if you pull down this building, the problem will be solved. Maybe that is what your consultant are telling you. That's what you promised us, that if we pull this building down, if we do this, the problem will be solved. You have done those things, and the problem is still with us. So what is it? So that we can sustain public confidence. There are other technical sides that we as religious leaders, we may not understand, that we will hold our leaders on the promises they give to us, the proof they make, the studies they have made, and the suggestions, the recommendations they give. So what they tell us that if we pull this building down, we pull this building down, we will get the results. Why are we not getting the results? So we will want them to help us appreciate the problem. But it seems to me there are policy issues that will go beyond civil society groups like the Christian Council of Ghana.
Reverend Kwabena Opunu-Frimpong is the General Secretary of the Christian Council of Ghana. He spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today. Matapishi ni kinya, uzirudisha tena kwenye kinywa. Japo mengi ulisema, kama nuru ghafla ukazima. Ikawa ngumu kukusahau, nikasema moyo ukome. Kwa kali sumu na madharau, penzi ulivunja na ngome. Unajua hata nikilia, siwezi kutokwa na machozi. Wewe ulifanya macho yangu nione wengi wao, au kauzuru moyo wangu. Penzi kwa maneno na tamani wewe kurudia zamani ni ndoto wewe ni rubuni kwa penzi la kidani kama mtoto na wewe acha ibaki story mimi na wewe na penzi mimi na wewe acha ibaki story mimi na wewe na wewe acha ibaki story mimi na wewe na penzi mimi na wewe acha ibaki story kitanda na shuka tuliolalia mapenzi yana siri kubwa sishangai mtu akilia kubali mboni zangu zimtazame mwingine maridhia ya moyo wangu huenda sifungu pengine cha kushangaza hadharani mengi ya kuficha ukaweka wazi nikaisi sijui mapenzi labda kwako sino kinazi na unajua hata nikilia siwezi kutokwa na machozi wewe ulifanya macho yangu nione wengi waongo au kauzuru moyo wangu uliuza penzi kwa maneno natamani wewe kurudia zamani ni ndoto wewe ni rubuni kwa penzi la kidani kama mtoto na wewe acha ibaki story mimi na wewe na penzi mimi na wewe acha ibaki story mimi na wewe tambua mapenzi mabaya kidona chake akinaga dawa mazoea ai lakini mimi nishazoea mwana ila tambua mapenzi mabaya kidona chake akinaga dawa na wewe acha ibaki story ni na wewe mapenzi ni na wewe na wewe acha ibaki story ni na wewe mapenzi ni na wewe. Moyoni, moyoni, moyoni. Uendo pacha wangu, mrithi wangu.
Yakuya wa kitabu fungue
ufungue
usome jinsi gani unavyonifanya ni ukue zaida huye na kwa wameshi ewa wenda shise mpaka kwerera baba utunga mesi japo ni unimishe utamu utamu moyo wangu mikuvenwa na utamu sanini tatizo mami basi sema nyelewe saima o
Voice na bamboo,
voice na bamboo,
maka
Touche la gauche.
And that was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Jonah Cummings, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the earth moves at different speeds depending on who you are. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
30 soldiers from Niger and 2 from Nigeria were killed in a Boko Haram attack by hundreds of assailants on June 3rd on the southeastern town of Bosso, close to the border with Nigeria. The United States condemns in the strongest terms Boko Haram's barbaric attack on the military in Niger. In addition to the soldiers killed in the onslaught, 67 individuals were injured. This latest attack, said the State Department in a written statement, further underscores Boko Haram's blatant disregard for the people of the Lake Chad Basin area. It was the deadliest attack carried out in Niger by the Islamic terrorist group since April 2015, when at least 74 people, including 28 civilians, were killed at the Lake Chad island of Karamga. Boko Haram has been fighting since 2009 to establish an Islamic caliphate in Nigeria, adhering to strict Sharia law. About 2.3 million people have been displaced and thousands have been killed during the seven-year insurgency. Bosso is in Niger's Diffa region, where many people have sought sanctuary from Boko Haram violence. Boko Haram attacks in the area began in February 2015, with increased violence since April 2016, according to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. As many as 40,000 refugees are moving to safer environments and are in need of humanitarian aid. The United States stands by its partners in Niger, Nigeria, Chad, and Cameroon, and supports their efforts to fight and defeat Boko Haram. These countries, in addition to Benin, have contributed troops to a 9,000-strong regional task force dedicated to fighting the terrorist group. International cooperation and a comprehensive approach remain vital components of this unified effort to bring lasting peace and security to the region and defeat to the terrorists.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.